Hello and welcome to ChatBiz. With me today I have Jim Rogers, who is from HMRC Research and Development Unit, which are based in Kent. Hello Jim, welcome.
Hiya.
Now, there's some new legislation with regards to allowances, tax, etc. coming in with regards to R&D, research and development, and also what you call the patent box.
Yes, there's some controversy whether it's patent or patent. I'm going to try and stick with patent today.
Right.
But either is correct, depending on who you ask.
Right. So with regard to the patent box, what is that? What does it mean?
The patent box, conceptually, is relatively simple. For tax purposes, companies pay corporation tax on their profits, and there are contras, capital allowances, and all sorts of stuff. Once they've worked out what their profits are, they pay at a certain rate. The government recently announced that that will be going down to 21%. So 21% of your profits, and that's your tax. Now, the patent box will allow companies for certain parts of their profits to pay at 10% instead of 21%.
All right.
So fairly substantial saving.
Yeah.
And of course, because it's the patent box, it's the profits that relate to the sale of items that have a patent in them.
Right.
So that could be as glorious as the cutting-edge pharma companies with their multi-billion pound patents, the cutting-edge cancer drugs, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be Joe Bloggs Limited from his small garden shed, who has invented, for example, a clockwork radio.
Right.
If the thing you're selling has a patent in it on any part, however relatively insubstantial the item might be, then the sales of that item are in the patent box, and any profits attributable are charged at 10% as opposed to the main rate of tax.
Which at the minute is
21. At the minute it's 23, but
it's
dropping down year on year, and
right.
As of next year it will be 2015, I think, it will be 21.
And do you think this is the government trying to get a kickstart onto entrepreneurs and young people in particular, or do you think it's aimed mainly at the big companies?
I think conceptually it was brought in because large companies saw it as an attractive tax regime. However, it's not aimed at any size of company in particular. It is just a regime for all corporates. So they have to be a company, but provided they're a company,
right,
then they can be within it. Obviously, there is a cost impediment to patents. They're not, in and of themselves, cheap things to obtain.
Yeah.
However, if you have something which would stand to be protected, then obviously the patent can pay for itself. There are many reasons, economic drivers, why you may or may not seek to obtain such protection. But the patent box obviously would be one of those drivers to be considered, because now with when the thing's fully in, an 11% saving on your tax bill
could be huge.
Yeah, it could be huge.
It really could.
So if the thing you're patenting looks like it might be a seller, then there's even more incentive now to seek and obtain the relevant protection.
Now, does it only cover anything that's UK patented?
No, there's a list of issuing authorities, for want of a better term. So the UK Intellectual Property Office is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Most people still call it the Patent Office, but it has rebranded. There is a European equivalent, the European Patent Office, or EPO. A lot of people will know it as, and that applies to the whole of Europe. So if you've got a patent there, that will also qualify. And there are other listed states within the European Economic Area,
right,
which are also qualifying. Germany is, France isn't. There's a full list that I don't intend to go through.
And
today,
are they on the website?
They are on the website.
We can put a link to that bit. So, as a small company, I've developed a widgety woo for the base of it, and I've gone through with a lawyer, had it all registered, and I have a patent. And this widgety woo allows me to sell, I don't know, 1,000 units a week. but I also have a different product. Mm-hmm. So I have to keep control of the patented ones, because it's only on the patented product that I get the relief.
It is, yes, that's right. Correct. So in a simple example, you if your widgety woo is a reclining chair. You right. You make chairs, and you've been doing it for a number of years, and you're finding you're losing market share to somebody because they do a reclining chair. Now, you make a reclining chair, but the hinge, for some reason, you want it to do it in a slightly different way. Perhaps you want to use a greener material, or the thing that already is in existence is perhaps already protected, so you need to do something different. You design the reclining chair, and you seek and obtain your patent, then obviously that chair is now in the patent box.
Right.
If the relative cost of the hinge, say the hinge is 50p and the chair sells for £5,000, I'm not saying that's your business model, but the wholesale is in. So it's a generous regime in the sense that one in, all in. So you only have to have one patent and the whole item's in.
That's fantastic.
But in the example we were just using, there are two main ways that you can compute your patent box deduction. One is by apportionment and one is called streaming. Streaming is much more complicated in the sense that you have to directly attribute all expenses to the sales. But for simplicity, and so a lot of SMEs might find it more appealing to use the apportionment method, and all you then do is take the profits and apportion it by sales value. So in the example we just used, if 50% of your sales are non-recliner chairs and 50% are recliner chairs, then 50% of your profits would be in the patent box.
Well, so it's not really difficult.
It doesn't have to be.
Right.
The reason that the streaming methodology exists at all is because if, in the example we just used, you've got a patented chair, that intellectual property often will enable you to sell the thing at an enhanced value.
Right.
So a box standard chair, you have a lot of competitors in the market, your cost there is to drive to keep costs down or maybe to improve quality somehow. But the IP often will lead to an increased profitability in that income stream. So the streaming methodology allows you to apportion costs directly. It's more computationally, it's more convoluted, but it enables people where they think there's a cost benefit to actually attribute the right profit. Because if you just do it on a sales split, as we mentioned, then 50% effectively of your costs have been attributed to the recliner chair, whereas in actual fact maybe it's more like 40%.
Yeah.
And in the weird topsy-turvy world of the patent box, more profits is good. The more profits you can get into the patent box, the less tax you'll pay.
Right.
Whereas normally, of course, you're trying to decrease your profits.
I've understood that. I hope everybody else has.
But most well-run businesses would have some kind of management accounting system because they'd want to know how much profit they were making, whether they were selling the thing for the right profit, etc. But as a bare minimum, I think everybody would know their sales split.
Yeah.
I think that would be pretty much the bare minimum controls and checks and balances you'd have. So the scheme is designed so that even with the lowest of controls, so micro, the smaller a company is, the less controls it tends to have. But even a very micro company would know what it had sold of what.
Mm.
And so on the very simplistic level, the computation can be done quite simply with information that almost all entities would have to hand. Mm. That's the idea, certainly.
Right. Which is great for the smaller company, but if we look at the large international companies, do you think this will be attracting them to the UK?
It's certainly the intention, not just the patent box. There's been a number of CT reforms aimed at...
Sorry,
corporation tax, I apologise. Corporation tax reforms aimed at making the UK a more attractive place to do business. The coalition government specifically got its innovation and research strategy for growth, which HMRC's part of that is the delivery of the patent box and the existing and slightly augmented research and development tax credits. But there are a number of other things. Controlled foreign companies legislation has been amended to make it more simpler. And obviously, the CT, the corporation tax rate, has been reduced generally, and of course now for patent profits down to 10%.
Mm-hmm. With regards to research and development, do you find that it is more the larger companies rather than the smaller micro companies that are using the tax benefits of research and development products?
The answer actually isn't as clear-cut as you might think. In essence, though, no is the answer. And the reason I say that is because the research and development regimes are split into two. So there is a regime specifically targeted at SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises, which is much more generous. There is a mirror regime, for want of a better term, for large entities. And when we say large in this regard, we mean the tests are slightly more complicated than this, but more than 500 employees.
Right.
So quite big concerns. And yes, there is a regime for them, but it's much less generous. So, for example, as of now, if you're an SME, you can spend, if you spent £100 on research and development, you could, in your tax computations, you could claim a deduction for £225. So you get an extra 125% deduction. So if you spent £100 in your tax computation, you would be claiming £225.
So the government are giving £125 to help with research and development?
Not quite, because that's not quite how the tax computation works. But if that extra £125 deduction reduces your tax bill, if you're profitable, or if it creates or augments a loss, you can surrender it for tax credit, so actual cash.
Right.
And that works out at, all other things being equal, no other caps or complications being encountered, it works out at 24p in the pound that you can get back. So
that's quite good.
It is a very generous regime, which is why it's specifically targeted at SMEs. It's designed and intended to help bridge that gap for small startups. I mean, obviously, they still need to go out and seek funding and all the other things they would normally need to do. But it's aimed to help with that cash flow crisis that small startups, particularly one idea development companies, often run into. And there is a lot of evidence that suggests that in that particular regard, it's been very beneficial. With quite a lot of success stories. I can't, unfortunately, for confidentiality reasons, actually give you any names, but there's quite a lot of public domain information demonstrating that the scheme has worked in that regard, and so it's specifically more generous for SMEs.
Right.
Now, of course, just because of the nature of the big boys, if that's what we're calling them, the figures that they put in the first place to R&D are substantial, so the relative numbers are dwarfing, but in terms of the actual level of relief and the sheer number of claims, then it's all about the SMEs.
Excellent. So how do I justify research and development? How can I say that I've either spent time or I have got a researcher in? I mean, if I employ a researcher, can all of their costs go against my research and development?
Yeah, I mean, it comes down, as it always does, in tax to cost, effectively. So you need to demonstrate that you spent some money. You need to demonstrate what's called a project. And there's a definition of R&D which runs to some number of pages in guidance. In essence, you want to work out who or a number of whos in a company really know what they're talking about. We call them the competent professional. In the example we were using before, it's your chief engineer for designing your reclining chair hinge, probably.
Right.
And you go along to him and you ask him this question broadly. You say, what was it that you did? And did you know how to do it? If he says, yes, I knew that it would be one of two things and that it would take me 6 weeks and I did it, that's not R&D. If he says, well, we can usually solve a problem, but we had no idea at the start. Nobody else knows how to do it. It's a new thing. We didn't know. And this time we were successful, and other times we haven't. Then that sounds like it is R&D.
Right.
So The tax definition is more convoluted than that, but the thumbnail sketch is that. So if you've done something that nobody else has done effectively, and it doesn't have to be in cutting edge pharma, it could be in designing a chair, then that's what we call the R&D project, and then you attribute cost to it. And there are a number of categories of cost that you're allowed to claim. One of them is employee costs, mm-hmm. wages. You can also claim an element for heat, light and power, something called consumables, which is, in the example of the chair, would be, you know, your rivets when you were designing that ended up getting thrown away, etc. And subcontracted R&D. So it's not an employee, but you've brought somebody in to do a specific task.
Right.
You know, Jeff down the road is a bit of an expert in reclining chairs, and you might draft him in to get him to do an element of the work. And also, we call them externally provided workers because we like to change the names of things, but really, if you think of them as contract staff,
right.
So agency staff, really.
Right. So it's difficult.
No,
to identify research and development.
It doesn't have to be. It sounds scary, but it's just about working out who in the company knows and then just asking them that thumbnail sketch. So once you've found an activity, then really it's just about attributing cost. So, I mean, if your head technician did nothing for it took him 6 weeks, and that's all he did morning, noon and night was design that thing, and then he came to you and said, I've got the reclining chair hinge now, I've nailed it, you know, a few abortive tries, but I've done it, it's taken me 6 weeks. Well, you get his 6 weeks of wages, that goes, and, you know, all the metal and everything.
Yeah.
Now, some companies, depending on the size, will have different levels of financial control and different levels of records.
Mm.
So, you know, in an ideal world, you'd be able to press a button and it'd tell you exactly how much that costs, but most people don't live in the ideal world. But usually you can have a good guess, sit down and do some thinking about, well, okay, I didn't know it was exactly 6 weeks, but maybe it was 10% of my time. There's various ways of apportioning it, but mm-hmm. usually an entity would have some methodology. And then, you know, obviously, if you've got any questions, then you can just phone one of the research and development units and we'll be glad to talk you through it.
All right, so there's help there for anybody if they think it is going to be quite complicated. But the way you've explained it, Jim, I've understood it. So if I've understood it, I imagine most people out there will have.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite simple to understand research and development. Now, can you then put... Now you've done your research and development and you've got your nice extra percentage off the government against your tax.
Mm-hmm.
Can you then put that into a patent box?
It's designed so that the two things don't conflict. But one is about activity, but the patent box is more defined than that because there must be a patent.
Right.
Patent is shorthand because there are certain other rights of slightly equivalent nature, but I could give a 5-hour symposium just on that. But if we say it's a patent or an exclusive right over a patent, so
right.
If we say patent for the shorthand,
okay.
Physically it's an intangible, but you have to actually own it. And so if in the research and development for the reclining hinge, I don't really know why I've picked that, but here we are.
It's a good one.
So in that example, if the company decided that it was novel and it was new, and for whatever reason, and there can be a lot of drivers, economic and in terms of not wanting to publish what they've done, there can be all sorts of drivers why you might not want a patent. If they don't apply for the patent, then the patent box can never apply to them.
Right.
But the fact that you've claimed in developing it, say it cost £1,000 to develop, and you've made your R&D claim, and you've got your £2,250 deduction, and then you patent it, when those sales come through, they'll be in the patent box.
Right.
Irrespective.
So really, research and development comes first?
Research and development would almost certainly have had to have come first. Now, the company might not have made a claim, for whatever reason, because some things that are patentable might have been developed and still might not have qualified for R&D. There are,
right.
As always...
So it's an anomaly.
there can be complications. So whether or not a company has made a research and development claim it doesn't impinge on their ability to be in the patent box. But usually they're designed to coexist. So it's envisaged that a company has an idea, it researches that idea. Whilst it's incurring that expenditure, it claims research and development relief to try and overcome that hurdle. Once it's finalised that idea, it applies for a patent and it monetises the product. And when the sales of that product come through, then it's in the patent box. So it's a deliberate timeline. And that's deliberately so because there was a bit of a regime cliff edge that we said, right, well, you've developed it now, you're on your own. And this is just a further acknowledgement by the government that actually this innovation, research, this skills base is one of the key things the UK has to offer the world. And we're in a sort of labour-based economy. We're often going to struggle to compete directly with places like China, where wage costs are cheaper. But we have excellent education. We have universities that are the envy of the world and the people coming out of them that are second to none. And this is trying to help encourage and foster the tapping in of that talent to keep it here.
On research and development, how many years back can you go?
Research and development, it's not a standalone thing. You file your corporation tax return as normal. Mm-hmm. Now, your account dates, say they ran to the 31st of March, you normally, barring the normal tax twiddly bits, you have a year within which to file. So the 31st of March this year, I would have to the 31st of March next year to file. And then you have another year where you're allowed to amend that claim. So that's just the corporation tax self-assessment system. So in effect, you have 2 years.
Right.
Subject, there can be reasons why it can be slightly different, but almost always 2 years. So unless you're within the time limit to amend or file your return, then you are out of luck.
Right.
But this would be one of the considerations you'd have when you were filing your tax return. It would just be one of the conversations you would have with your accountant, agent, or in-house specialist, or or yourself, or whatever.
Yeah. I was just thinking, for the people who have developed brand new ideas and products, who have possibly done their own tax return and have paid corporation tax, sometimes on certain things you can carry forward and carry backwards, tax relief, etc. And whether this was something that, if you suddenly realise that actually all that work that you did 4 years ago, you know, could you charge that through? But you can't. It's got to be done within.
I can't. I won't say can't, because there is always the option of what's called a late claim. But there are very, very specific reasons why Asian Arabian Customs would allow a late claim. Not really the subject of today's discussion. It is occasionally possible, but highly unusual. And of course, for the patent box, it only applies for profits earned after April, the 1st of April this year.
Yes.
So it sort of doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
So quite a lot of companies, depending on when their AP falls, might not be looking to submit that return for, well, at least 16 months maybe.
Right.
Of course, we would hope that they were doing their thinking a bit more real time than that, because they might want to think about how they capture costs, working out whether it would be beneficial for them to make a streaming election. So there are things they might want to consider earlier than they would normally in regards to tax.
So the first thing to do, go to the website.
Yes.
We'll have the links to the exact bit where the patent box and research and development is on our pages. If they can't have their question answered easily, then they ring into your offices. We'll put the contact details up there as well.
Yep.
And somebody like yourself, an expert, will be able to talk them through whatever process is required.
Yep. Somebody will answer the phone. It almost certainly won't be me. And they'll talk you through your question, and they'll either answer it themselves, or they'll pass you through to somebody else who can, or in, you know, exceptional circumstances, we're a relatively small team, we might all be out, they might take a message and we'll call you back.
Right, that's wonderful. Well, Jim, I think you've explained that really easily